Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, August 12th, 2015, and this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. It is 69 degrees and overcast here in upstate New York. A little bit chilly this morning. Looks like it's going to rain, but hey, that's okay. At least it's not 106 degrees like where some of my friends live. So where do we leave off with the last live show that was from Monday, titled DARPA, Synthetic Biology, and Terraforming Mars? Yes, we looked at some pretty insane stuff that then sent me down a few rabbit holes yesterday. And I have some stuff that I think you guys are going to want to hear about. So we looked at a few different things the other day. Synthetic biology and DARPA's whole push we've talked about ad nauseum, their Living Foundry program we looked at yesterday. We heard a couple clips from one of the women at DARPA talking about how we have 30 million to 30 billion organisms here on Earth, and she wants to be able to, on demand, cut their genes up, insert the trace that she wants from one organism to the next, and be able to make whatever she wants, whenever she wants, with biology. We also talked about in the past that CRISPR-9 technology, where they create the suicide genes. We heard a couple clips about that yesterday as well in regards to the OxyTech moths. And then we discovered, and it was brand new news, that there was a new company called InterExon that was a synthetic biology company that was purchasing OxyTech, which was a corporation that created the genetically modified mosquitoes that we've talked about that they released down in the Bahamas and Brazil. They want to release in the Keys. They had an affiliation with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So now we have this merging of synthetic biology with this InterExon, which is pretty damn frightening, because I was just reading that the CEO of InterExon is a billionaire. And remember, billionaires, regardless of where they are or what country they're running or what corporation they're in charge of, billionaires butt rub on the backside. So there are no enemies in the billionaire club. They sit around and eat their caviar and drink their champagne at their events where they're deciding the future of Earth for you and me. That's exactly what they do. So anyway, DARPA's wanting to create all these new life forms, and Bill Gates is running around talking about how we need to have the carbon quotient go to zero and all kinds of wonderful things. So anyway, I dug into a bunch of stuff last night, and my head literally is spinning because I really was having difficulty putting all these together where the dots would connect, but we're going to give it a shot anyway. So I came across three different stories about Bill Gates, all from 2015. This one's from March 17th of 2015 with the latest investment Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation CEO calls the private sector a quote-unquote powerful tool. Yes, because we are in the process right now, as the tech corporations have been brought into the fold, as Obama has inked executive orders for the supercomputing project and the brain project that, you know, Google and Microsoft and Motorola all happen to be involved in. Like, how interesting is that, that they're all involved in this brain project? We also have Google with their Calico project for longevity. I mean, there's definitely writing on the wall here. These people are all pulling together, and they're bringing it all under one heading to be able to move us into 2045. And we heard that clip at the end of the show Monday, where we are going to be able to live forever. Remember, it's not for you or me. We're just the guinea pigs that are going to show them what works and what doesn't. Anyway, here, let's listen to this. Susan Desmond Hellman believes the private sector can change the world. Desmond Hellman is the CEO of the Seattle-based Bill Melinda Gates Foundation, which recently invested, what? Yes, $52 million in a German biopharmaceutical company called CureVac. the Puget Sound Business Journal reported. Now remember, too, Bill Gates came out in that TED conference and said, we'll be able to control the population with vaccines. Now, we've dug a lot into vaccines, and any of these new vaccines that are coming out are Frankenstein vaccines. These are not old school immunology. These are not giving you some small particles of a disease or an outbreak that then gives your body a heads up to be able to produce antibodies anymore. This is literally putting in nanotechnology or putting in some sort of synthetic biology that then literally goes in and makes changes to your genes. We talked about this a couple shows ago about the DNA switch flipping and turning things on and off. That's the way these new vaccines are going to be working. And there are some already, like the Gardasil vaccine. Look it up. Virus-like nanoparticles. All right, anyway, the announcement makes the largest equity investment the foundation has ever made in a private company, the Business Journal reports. It also makes a slight change in the foundation's strategy, the New York Times reported. In the past, Bill Melinda Gates Foundation has focused largely on providing grants. Now it has started to invest in companies that could help advance its goal in health. Quote, the way I look at it is we're trying to solve some pretty hard problems and we need to bring everything to bear, says Desmond Hellman, who took the foundation's helm in 2013. If we do not involve private industry, we're leaving out a powerful tool. CureVac is working on technology that could produce vaccines faster for less money. So good old thing that Billy Gates is investing in vaccine companies. Says this is enticing to the foundation, which has given $50 million to fight Ebola and billions more to help people live healthier, more productive lives, according to the foundation's website. The investment also comes after what? Yes! Johnny ruined everyone's Disney World vacations with the measles outbreak, which brought the vaccination debate back into the spotlight. It's an important area of research for the foundation. In fact, Bill Gates co-hosted a vaccine summit with who? Crown Prince of Abu Dhabi, to show how vaccines and immunizations help achieve global child health and development goals 2 years ago. Well, how great is that? So let's take a little look at CureVac, now a part of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation empire. And I go out to their homepage, CureVac.com, C-U-R-E-V-A-C. And what does it say? Welcome to CureVac, the RNA people. Yes, and it's a registered trademark. The utilization of nucleic acid RNA, the oldest biomolecule in the world, for medical purposes, was believed for a long time to be impossible. But with our pioneering spirit and determination and our mad science gone mad department, CureVac has been successful in optimizing the natural structure for RNA-based medicine. Hey, who would have believed it? Based on convincing preclinical and clinical study data, what was once only a vision has now been confirmed. Our RNA technologies have the potential to completely open the door to new and exciting solutions for the treatments of many diseases. mRNA, which is your messenger RNA, is an active ingredient, can be used in treating cancers. Yes, we have a cancer cure. Step right up, people, and get your synthetic biology vaccine. Can be used in treating cancer and for the prevention of infectious diseases. However, such examples are only a few of the possibilities for our innovative RNA technology platforms. Guys, I don't know what to say about this, but all I got to say is run away screaming. And as they are pushing mandatory vaccinations, we have this Vaccinate All Children Act of 2015 in New York just slammed through. The meningitis vaccine is being mandatory now for all school children as of the end of June for the beginning of next school year, where there is no good reason because, hey, we get a a maximum of maybe 4 cases a year of meningitis in New York State. Yet, RFK Jr. points out in an article, an op-ed that we read, I think it was last week, how the adverse reactions on that vaccine was like, I don't remember what the number was. It was 1 and something. But regardless, there will be more children that were going to be injured by this vaccine with their statistics for the adverse reaction for meningitis than the number of cases we ever get in the state. Remember, we live in like Arctic lands here for 9 months out of the year. We don't have a lot of meningitis floating around from infected mosquitoes. All right, demanding molecule with key functions. Let's get back to the RNA. In the human body, RNA carries out diverse tasks, and one of its key functions is the translation of genetic information into proteins. Messenger RNA, or mRNA, acts as the carrier of specific building blocks of this process. Scientists have long sought to utilize this ingenious natural concept for medical purposes, but up until just a few years ago, the molecule itself was considered uncontrollable, especially under clinical conditions. RNA was viewed as being too unstable and not particularly effective, and it was dwarfed by its sister DNA, the other and more prominent naturally occurring nucleic acid. We have always held true the molecule that nature developed into its first biomolecule of emerging life could never be a faulty design, and CureVac has generated the technologies to make RNA manageable and more stable, thus optimizing its properties. Now, what is just so amazingly scary about this is that if we go back to Oxitec and we dug in deep, you can go back to my archives. There were a couple shows that specifically had Oxitec in the title, and we kind of looked at how their technology for wiping out mosquitoes was working. And we discovered that they literally were going in and genetically modifying these mosquitoes so that when offspring were born, they would die. There were two different ways. I think there was one technology that was called population suppression and one technology called something like population elimination. And basically it prevented you from either A, reproducing, or B, it just killed all the offspring. And we're going to get to that in a second. Anyway, let's look at their versatile RNA technology platforms of CureVac. So good old Billy Gates is going to have these in his arsenals. Now, RNA active. It is developed based on optimized antigen encoding and complex mRNA modules, stimulates the immune system, thereby providing potent vaccines for the prevention of infectious diseases or supplying potent novel immunotherapies against cancer. Yes. The next one is RNA ART. It is their novel mRNA-based approach in the field of molecular therapy. The technology is designed to trigger the body's own production of desired proteins for therapeutic purposes. RNA antibody enables the prolonged expression of functional antibodies and antibody-like proteins from unmodified mRNA. This transient, reusable, and safe passive immunization platform can be used in prophylactic and therapeutic settings for a range of indications. Now, how scary is that? Because I will guarantee you this is the type of stuff that they're looking at using in the universal flu vaccines that they've been talking about at least since 2006 that they were working on with DARPA and Texas A&M University. This says it's going to be used as a prophylactic. So basically, they're going to inject you with the shit, and then when it finds something, it can search and destroy. And then, of course, there's the last one, RNA adjuvant. developed based on long-chain non-coding RNA molecules, improves the quality and quantity of the immune response, thereby amplifying the effects of the immunotherapeutic treatments against cancer or conventional vaccines used to prevent infectious disease. This, to me, we're going to let this shit go into our babies. Do you guys realize that this stuff is already going into all the newfangled shit that's coming out? And the reason why all these vaccines are going to be not just recommended any longer, they're going to be mandatory, is because there's lots of money involved in developing this new technology, and they don't want to have to pay the line item R&D budget. Hey, every time there's an emergency, oh my God, it's bird flu, it's swine flu, it's Ebola, it's freaking the plague. What was the newest one I just saw? Legionnaires. I mean, watch, we'll find a Legionnaires vaccine soon. They always seem to come out with some newfangled, never before seen, we just fixed it, came up with a solution to your problem, and now everyone should line up and get a shot. All right. I think we should look at one more Bill Gates investment. Yesterday, when we were talking about synthetic biology and DARPA and all the crazy stuff going on, we discovered that the Department of Energy had been involved for a very long time in synthetic biology, and I kind of scratched my head a little bit there. But then I thought about it in connection with a story that we found on Friday. Well, let's think about this one for a second. So we have the Department of Energy has been involved with synthetic biology for quite a number of years, and what? Oh, August 4, 2015. Bill Gates is doubling down on clean energy with a $2 billion with a B dollar personal investment. Oh, clean energy? Wait, but the Department of Energy is working on synthetic biology to be able to, oh, I don't know, come up with new Frankenstein biofuels? Yes, well, it just got a $2 billion infusion from Billy Gates. Bill Gates is no stranger to progressive thinking. The philanthropic foundation he runs with his wife Melinda has backed everything from the longer-lasting pill-based contraception. Don't forget about that one. That was the permanent birth control we talked about a month ago. He's backed everything from a longer-lasting pill-based contraception to a process where human waste can be converted into safe drinkable water. Yes, bug protein and fecal water for you, puny humans. Most of their efforts are focused on improving conditions for the world's poor in the markets, often neglected by the private sector corporations and government aid. And it is to safeguard the ongoing work of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation that Bill Gates has announced he will be doubling his personal investments in clean energy technology over the next 5 years, taking his total stake to a whopping $2 billion in renewable energy production and research. Gates argues that the time is right because he believes that the next 5 years will see a major advancement in technology and initiatives that will help solve climate change. Of course it will. The next 5 years is going to be some of the most insane science fiction became reality that you have ever seen. While Gates' personal investments are separate from the investments made by Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, there is a common goal between them. As Gates notes, of all those who will be affected by climate change, it's the poor people who are already vulnerable to harsh environmental and economic conditions that will suffer the worst. Despite the size of Gates' personal funding for clean technologies, he acknowledges that it is just a drop in the ocean compared to the investments and decisions made by governments around the world, prompting him to make a case for why a carbon-free future is a realistic and worthwhile commercial goal. Gates lays out a three-step model on his blog for how the countries of the world can achieve his ambitious targets. First, he says we need to create incentives for innovation by drastically increasing government funding for research on clean energy solutions. Second, we need to develop markets that can help get to what? Yes, zero carbon emissions. Don't breathe, people. With a model that more accurately recognizes the full impact of emitting carbon. Finally, Gates says that we need to treat poor countries fairly. Yes, we need to go over there with all of our newfangled CureVax RNAi vaccines and try to cure their diseases first and foremost without any type of ramifications when lots of people die, except in India, of course. Because that Gardasil vaccine, India has now filed a lawsuit against Bill and Melinda Gates because they did not give proper consent. Gates says, if we create the right environment for innovation, we can accelerate the pace of progress, develop and deploy new solutions, and eventually provide everyone with reliable, affordable energy that is carbon-free. Yes, and if we remember Eric Drexler with our desktop nanofactories, yes, we will accelerate progress and we will be able to spread it around the world without stopping. Now, let's pop over to the third investment. So this one was from August 4th. We had a brand new one that I found last night, August 10th. Bill Gates and 13 other investors pour $120 million into revolutionary gene editing startup. Ding, ding, ding. 4 years ago, the protein called CRISPR-Cas9, an enzyme that bacteria use to attack viruses that infect them, was unknown to humans. But now it is ubiquitous in science labs as the most efficient way of cutting and pasting DNA yet invented. So this is another Bill Gates investment, guys. This is really frightening because we're going to look at this a little bit. And knowing Bill Gates' history and eugenics and population reduction, this should make everybody's hair stand up on their arms. Wired Magazine, in a breathless cover story, called CRISPR-Cas9 the, quote, Genesis engine, unquote, instructing readers to buckle up because the easy DNA editing CRISPR enables change in the world. And now at least one CRISPR-focused company has the cash to back the hype. Editas Medicine, E-D-I-T-A-S, based in Cambridge, Massachusetts, already had the money. Founded in November of 2013 with $40 million from Third Rock Ventures, Polaris Ventures, and Flagship Ventures. And yes, people in chat last night when I dropped the story started looking those suckers up. Look them up, see who's involved. It was the first big CRISPR effort out of the gate. The company says that money has not been spent, and in May, Juno Therapeutics, which is developing cell therapies for cancer, inked a collaboration that gave Editas $25 million up front and another $22 million in research support. Any products that result could deliver Editas another $250 million. But those investments are dwarfed by today's announcement, which put $120 million into the tiny company's bank account, enough, Editas said, to keep it running for a projected 3 years, and the lead investor is a newly created firm called Bingo, spelled B-N-G-O, a select group of family offices led by Boris Nikolic, who was previously a science advisor to Bill Gates. Both Editas and Gates' office confirm that the Microsoft billionaire, who is the world's richest man, is among the Bingo backers. also included in the $120 million funding round, take a deep breath, Deerfield Management, Viking Global Investors, Fidelity Management and Research Company, funds and accounts managed by T. Rowe Price and Associates, oh, good old Google Ventures, Jennison Association on behalf of certain clients, Kosla, C-H-O-S-L-A Ventures, Eco R1 Capital, Cassidon Capital, Omega Funds, Cohen Private Investments, and Alexandria Venture Investments. They all appreciate the vast potential of this science, says Catherine Bosley, the chief executive of Adidas. The heart of the conversation we had with everyone is how you translate this very exciting but young science into treatments and therapies. Now remember, this is the same sort of technology that Oxitec, now owned by Interex, was utilizing to wipe out entire populations of mosquitoes. It is a big leap for technology that has yet to even be tried in patients, especially since the intellectual property landscape around CRISPR-Cas9 is treacherous. Jennifer Doudna, D-O-U-D-N-A, how interesting a last name is that, and Emmanuel Charpentier published the first paper detailing how to use the enzyme to cut DNA. They filed for a patent for using it to edit the DNA of cells with nuclei like those of plants, animal, and people too. But Fang Zhang of the Broad Institute filed a separate patent on using it in cells with nuclei and was granted it first. Worst case scenario, if you're first to market with something that's going to create a survival benefit in the population, you maybe have to pay a royalty, or maybe there is a cross-licensing fee. It says the first project likely to be tried out in patients, she says, is a treatment for Leber's congenital amaurosis type 10, a genetic form of blindness. This disease is a good choice for the first attempt at making CRISPR-Cas9 work, she says, because it is in the eye where gene therapies are easier to deliver, and because it is caused by a single genetic misspelling that can be deleted out. It will be much harder to rewrite genes than to make simple deletions. But even so, Bosley says, it turned out to be harder to fix the LCA genes and cell cultures than Adidas scientists had expected. The CRISPR simply didn't cut it in the right place, and they had to figure out how to cut the DNA in two places in order to fix the broken gene. This is just so unbelievably horrifying. The building blocks of life, and we're cutting them like Tinker Toys. She says her team is also working hard on the Juno project, and Adidas is working on hemoglobinopathy, a type of genetic condition in which the molecule that carries oxygen in the red blood cells is defective. That will be a tougher project, she says. It'll involve not just cutting out DNA, but actually editing a gene. Yes, and we want them to figure out how to crack the mysteries to break oxygen being carried in the blood. Sounds like something I want to get behind. All right. I just, like I said, I had so much trouble trying to organize stories this morning. So let's add a little bit more. Why is this so scary? Well, story came out on the 3rd of August, 2015, talking about this very thing, this CRISPR-9 gene editing, a power for good or evil. The technology of gene drives holds immense potential for improving our life on this planet and also great dangers. Every so often, a scientific development appears with an immense potential for good, but at the same time, it also carries great risks of misused, either accidentally or deliberately. So it is with the technology called gene drives, which is a means of spreading genetic traits rapidly through a population of insects or other kinds of fast-breeding organisms, rather like a virus. It supercharges genetically modified genes so that they can defy the normal rules of inheritance. Normally, GM traits would not spread within a population of wild insects, let's say, unless they are part of a great evolutionary advantage. But when attached to a gene drive DNA cassette, practically every individual in a breeding population will eventually end up being a GM organism. Ding, ding, ding. Scientists are now waking up to the considerable practical possibilities that the technology presents. And there are three areas where gene drives could be a force for good. Oh, yes. Let's look at those first. The first is human health, particularly in insect-borne diseases such as malaria and yellow fever. Yes, and we know Bill Gates and all the money that he is investing in eradicating quote-unquote malaria. It is possible to envisage gene drive modifications to the mosquito, such as making all the offspring male, which could lead to a population crash. This would curb the transmission of some of the world's most devastating tropical diseases. And they're making it sound like this is science fiction. They've already done this. This is what Oxitec is doing. Oxitec, that is involved with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, that now has been purchased by a synthetic biology company called Interex. Or whatever they were called. I don't know. Yeah, I think it was Interex. The second use is in combating important crop pests, again, by introducing gene-drive genetic elements that lead a population crash. The third area is environmental conservation, notably in fighting invasive species such as rats on remote islands inhabited by ground-nesting birds, or the cane toads of Australia, which are wrecking the indigenous ecosystem. And yes, we heard the DARPA lady also talking in regards to them using synthetic biology to terraform Mars. And one of the things that she said is, we're going to actually, don't worry about us screwing up Mars, because we're going to test it here on Earth first. In all those regions where we've had corporations destroying the environment for the last 50 years, we're going to release this shit out into the wild and have all the synthetic biology go out and fix the environment back to the way it was before. And don't worry, because it's not going to affect you negatively in any way, shape, or form, or mutate human or Earth 1.0. Don't worry about it. We're going to fix it all, and it'll be pretty. However, the power of gene drive technology to accelerate the speed of GM traits also introduces immense potential hazards. The most obvious danger is some kind of accidental escape from a laboratory where gene drives are being developed and unleashing an organism that could potentially spread uncontrollably in the wild with untold consequences. Well, fuck Oxitec, because they already did it. Not just with mosquitoes, but with GM moths. They already did it, guys. They're like, don't worry about it. We set them up, so they got to get tetracycline, and there isn't tetracycline that lives in the environment, so they're all going to die anyway. They're letting the shit go. Okay, open the genie lid and fly, be free. They let them go. And not in just one place, in multiple places. I think there were three or four different places. And, you know, I don't see Australia mentioned much with the genetically modified mosquitoes, but that also was way back when, and that was part of Bill and Melinda Gates to combat some equine virus that was happening that they were getting from mosquitoes as well. More serious is the possibility that either a rogue state or a terrorist cell, oh yes, those terrorists under your bed and in your closet, with access to genetic laboratories in your basement or in the garage, might decide to generate a gene drive organism that could pose a threat to human health or economically important livestock. Just think of the damage to Britain's dairy and beef industries from the last foot and mouth epidemic. Yes, where they had to burn all the animals. And if we go back to the historic U.S. biowarfare program, you remember that they used insects as disease vectors, and foot and mouth disease was one of them, as well as plague and I don't even remember, guys. I don't know. My head is spinning. I tried to absorb so much this morning, and this is just making me want to flip out. As one concerned scientist has remarked, if gene drives can be used to make mosquitoes that are unfit for carrying the malaria parasite, it is conceivable that someone, somewhere, could use them to design GM mosquitoes that can deliver lethal bacterial toxins to humans. Yes. Little flying weapons of poison. And you know, I had read a story the one time about the gene drives with these GM mosquitoes. Who's to say? I mean, we've already found it. Dr. Huber is finding that some of this technology that they're putting into, let's say, Monsanto crops, where they're genetically modifying things, whether it be for BT corn or some of the Roundup Ready corn, they're finding that these genetic modifications are passing down the food chain. They're finding it in the animals that ingest this food, in the placental tissue, in the soil, around where these plants are grown. This is just unbelievable. So who's to say that one of these genetically modified mosquitoes that has their, you know, expiration date written into their genes wouldn't go bite somebody and pass on these, what they were calling, suicide genes to humans? Screw having ISIS getting their hands on the CRISPR-9 technology and inserting toxins to them become little flying weapons, like we already saw a DARPA film where they were talking about using the flying insects that could take out insurgents. Hey, who's to say that this isn't going to spread to other biological organisms? This is, how can we guard against this possibility? Well, the answer must be totally transparent rather than secrecy and data suppression, which, yes, that is exactly what is happening right now. It is frankly not possible to prevent this technology from being discussed and researched by civilian scientists, so the information cannot be classified. And we read that yesterday, that much of this is classified. Of course it is. The best defense against the nefarious use of gene drive technology will be to make everyone aware of its potential, which means that countermeasures and safeguards can be built in and constructed before anyone tries to build a terrorist bioweapon based on this technique. Unlike nuclear devices, genetic bioweapons would be relatively cheap and easy to make, requiring none of the great state infrastructure needed for the atomic weapons of mass destruction. So, the most secure way to defend ourselves against these bioweapons is for all scientists and governments to be as open about the technology as possible, yet never going to happen, and for all of us to stay alert and informed. Now, with the adult attention span being about 8 seconds less than a goldfish, I don't think the majority of anybody out there is going to be able to even grasp the concept of gene drives or CRISPR-Cas9 technology. And if it doesn't get any better, yes, it did. Google has now changed their name to Alphabet. And they did that because they wanted to kind of divest Google's core technologies of search engines and YouTube and things of that nature, put that off onto its own realm, and then move all their other technologies under this Alphabet heading. Alphabet is kind of the parent company now. And that's where Larry Page and Sergey Brin have now moved up the food chain to take over Alphabet. It says Google is grappling with a problem that is familiar to hospital systems. The company has moved beyond its original mission and is trying to reconcile its short-term operations with its long-term ambitions. Healthcare executives are refocusing on population health, and Google's reshaping itself to tackle what's, this caught my attention, population level problems. Yes, Google is reshaping itself to tackle population level problems. And that's one reason by the why the tech giant on Monday, and that was yesterday or 2 days ago, announced that it is transforming from Google, the search engine firm with a diverse mix of subsidiaries, to Alphabet, a holding company that includes Google and a handful of intriguing, if currently unprofitable, startups that are disproportionately focused on what? Yes, healthcare. If you guys remember, they had a couple different things. The Calico Project was their whole immortality thing. They also had the blood-traveling nanobots that we read about, oh, probably 6 months ago. Says, of course, the holding company model might not be right for healthcare systems, but that is not the case with Alphabet. Google's pieces aren't all the same thing. Biotech, self-driving cars, that search engine thing, the markets and business models are all different. Synergies aren't as obvious, and the potential for internal competition seems much lower, and that's why a holding company model might make sense for Google and Alphabet than it does for a healthcare system. And don't forget, who else do we have at Google? Yes, Regina Duggan, DARPA lady, and good old the guy we love to hate, Ray Kurzweil, head of Google Engineering. There are four potential healthcare giants lurking within Google. One is Calico, the new biotechnology firm that's researching the biology of aging. Yes, that's their immortality project. Two, Google Ventures. That's their venture capital arm of Google, which invested 36% of its bazillions into healthcare companies last year. Number three, Google X, a moonshot division that is working on credible inventions right out of a sci-fi movie. Like, yes, I talked about this, nanoparticles intended to circulate throughout your bloodstream and spot diseases such as cancer. And number four, Google's life sciences division. And we've read about that. I mean, they literally have hundreds of doctors working in this campus dedicated to doing mad science gone mad medicine. This is Google, people. Life sciences. This is the team that's developing inventions like, oh, smart contact lenses designed to monitor your body through miniaturized sensors. Under Alphabet, each will have more room to be innovative and independent, and each will also be more accountable for performance, which could motivate them to work toward producing results. It is worth noting that some of these firms have already made a mark on healthcare. Google X, the ones that are working on nanoparticles circulating in your blood, have already given us Google Glass, which some hospitals and doctors believe could be transformative. And Google Ventures is already an important player in the healthcare venture capital world. The company has committed $153 million to healthcare investments last year. And I don't know if any more of this is worth reading. Says, I'm stuck with something that an investor, James Ulcher, posted on Tuesday morning a few weeks after he got our special tour of Google headquarters. Here's an excerpt of his post. We met with a friend high up at Google and learned some of the things that Google was working on. Nothing was related to search. Everything was related to curing cancer, a bracelet that can make all the cancer cells in your body move toward that bracelet, automating everything. Cars are just one of those things. Wi-Fi everywhere, Project Loon. Remember, they're flying all those balloons to make sure that they get everyone on the planet connected to the machine. And solving other, quote, billion-person problems. A problem is not considered worthy at Google unless it could solve a problem for a billion people. That's frightening. More tech companies putting their hat into getting into controlling every single cell in your body. And when we go back to a story that we read a few weeks back, and we're going to read this, I talked about this yesterday, They are working on a big global database, and I think Ron from Game On yesterday touched on a topic that we touched on, oh goodness, maybe 6, 8, 10 months ago, and we can go back there. I think it was at MIT where we had read about this. I remember exactly what the page looked like. And it was for barcoding your DNA. And it was the DNA of every organism on the planet Earth. And once you barcode or tag something, you can put it into a database. And once it's in the database, you can mix and match. You could do like the DARPA woman was talking about with their synthetic biology division, the biological technology office, for taking all the traits out of DNA that you found important, mixing and matching them out of the 30 billion that exist on Earth, and making new organisms on demand. Well, remember, a study came out, DNA carries traces of past events, meaning that poor lifestyle choices can affect future generations. Scientists now know that our DNA is being altered all the time by the environment, lifestyle, and traumatic events. So when they start looking at how to, quote, save humanity in the future, one of the things that they're going to be looking at when everything is in a big global database and they can use algorithms and maybe even artificial intelligence to search out some of the best traits and figure out who has some of the best breeding stock in their DNA, there's going to be those of us out there who have made bad lifestyle choices. I don't know. I smoke. I drink occasionally. I've had lots of stress in my life. I've had periods of my life where I've been really depressed or had lots of stressful years when I worked in technology. I bet my DNA is pretty fractured. So I'm not going to make a good future breeding stock, I wouldn't imagine. It says genetic faults caused by trauma, poor lifestyle, or environmental stresses can be passed down to future generations, said scientists at the University of Cambridge. Previous large studies have shown that devastating effects such as famine can scar future generations, making them more prone to obesity and diabetes. Yeah, but of course, not eating GMO foods isn't going to cause any damage to your DNA or give you obesity and diabetes. No! It's all about going hungry or being stressed out. However, it is the first time that a biological mechanism for the effect has been seen. And this story was actually just last month, 2 months ago, June 4th, 2015. Although the same genes are passed down through generations, scientists now know that our DNA is being altered all the time by the environment, lifestyle, and traumatic events. It is thought that these changes drive disease, premature aging, and early death. However, it was believed that these faults could not be passed down to future generations with a clean slate, essentially in the next generation. But now scientists at the University of Cambridge have found that in some areas of DNA, including those linked to mental illness and obesity, some of the fault remains. In fact, around 5% of our genetic code carries traces of past events, meaning that trauma and poor diet or lifestyle choices may be leaving a devastating legacy for children and grandchildren. So what a great reason to get rid of all of us faulty humans eventually and not allow us to be reproducing. Says Professor Ozzy Sunari of the Wellcome Trust Cancer Research UK Gordon Institute at the University of Cambridge. Wow, wasn't that a mouthful? The information needs to be reset in every generation before further information is added to regulate development of a newly fertilized egg. It is like erasing a computer disk before you add new data. Between week 2 and week 9 of an embryo's development, the genetic code is rewritten to erase genetic alterations from the parents. However, the researchers found that the process does not clear all of the changes. Around 5% of DNA appears resistant to reprogramming. Wow. Maybe that'll be a new Bill Gates technology investment, figuring out how to reprogram embryos' development between the ages of 2 weeks and 9 weeks to wipe the slate clean. Make perfect humans. Those escapee regions of the genome contain some genes that are particularly active in the neuronal cells and may serve important functions during development, the researchers believe. These genes are associated with such conditions as schizophrenia, metabolic disorders, and obesity. I wonder how much research they've done on the drugs that they feed us through our food and pharmaceuticals that cause those problems as well. Welfed Tang, a PhD student who's the first author on the study, adds, "Our study has given us a good resource for potential candidates of regions of the genome where information is passed down not just to the next generation, but potentially to future generations as well." Well, I guess tomorrow I'm going to have to dig into this connection that we found to Israel, but I would like to play you a clip, and I had me all set up here, and it's gone, so hold on 1 second. We're going to join the call. This came out 2 days ago. Yes, make sure you line up for your biohacking chip.
Not quite a cyborg, but they're working on it. Tech 24 Guillaume Gray is getting a chip implanted under his skin.
Once you're vaccinated, in other words, when a foreign body is introduced into your own, you're a cyborg. So I'm already a cyborg.
The implants use the NFC standard for near-field communication. The technology allows two devices to communicate with one another using radio waves in a range of 10 centimeters. This type of chip is found under the skin of pets, in passports, but also in credit cards. Guillaume could, if he wished, pay with just his hand or even open doors without a key.
Now, ding, ding, they talked about putting it in like a vaccine. They inject it under the skin and he could, open his door or pay for it by just waving his hand. We've talked about that, guys. This is the new biometric ID. Take the chip. And if you have thought crime or whatever and you do it wrong, we're going to lock you out of everything. Line up and get your chip. They're having parties to get their friends all injected.
I'm always losing my keys and security pass, so it might help me with that.
Guillaume will soon be able to use his hand to store data or unlock his phone. Like Hannes Hublag, the organizer of this implant party in Paris, this young Swede organizes parties of this type throughout Europe, the United States, and Mexico, where Frans van Katt caught up with him in February.
Definitely that implant technology is the technology of the future. It's just so simple and it's useful compared to carrying around all these keys and the cards in your pockets.
Yes, they have implant parties all over the United States and Europe, and oh my God, I lose my keys all the time. So this is just, you know, implant technology is just a no-brainer because you puny-brained humans with less than an 8-second attention span, you know, now you don't have to worry about losing your keys or remembering passwords or any of that really difficult stuff.
This implant, I will never lose it.
Microchip implants are already being used to store medical information by some people. Hannes Hublag hopes to make implants a viable business even if some medical professionals warn of potential risks such as electrical hazards and adverse tissue reaction.
Imagine an emergency room where a doctor could scan a critically ill patient in an instant and know his or her entire medical history. It's an idea that could save lives, also could get under your skin. Welcome to the future. Like 2 million other Americans, Denise is an epileptic. When a seizure strikes suddenly, the doctors in the ER need answers, and fast. Now imagine a device that could tell them all they need to know about any medical condition you have in a matter of minutes, at any hospital, anywhere in the world. Sound far-fetched? It's closer than you think.
On a typical day, patients come in with heart attacks, strokes, major trauma, with cancer patients in septic shock. You name it, we have it.
What might improve the odds for some of those patients at New Jersey's Hackensack University Medical Center is this. That tiny chip Dr. Joseph Feldman, head of the hospital's trauma unit, holds in his hand. It's a radio frequency identification, or RFID tag.
This is a man-made motor, a motor so small that more than 6,000 of them would fit on the head of a pin. Welcome to the world of the nanometer, a unit of measure that is 1/1,000,000,000 of a meter.
A nanometer is pretty small. One of the best analogies that I like to use is to compare it with a human hair. If you take a hair off of the top of your head, you can see that it's very thin. And now if you take something that's 100,000 times thinner than that, that's a nanometer.
The ability to observe and construct things this small is at the heart of nanotechnology.
It's very small, and it doesn't bother you at all, but it certainly is going to allow you to identify who you are, protect your child. If you have a new child that's born in a nursery, you can protect that child from having somebody walk off on it. You can also protect your loved ones in a nursing home so that you can put a bracelet on and identify that individual and be able to find that individual if that person wanders away. But I certainly would, and I think it's a coming thing. And the problem is that medical technology is so far behind that RFIDs are going to really be the impetus in order for us to get new technology in the medical field that's going to help people improve their quality of care, and that's what it's all about.
And I'm sorry, sir, did you just say you would get one implanted in your arm?
Absolutely, without a doubt.
And there you go. I don't know, guys. You know, we'll have to get back to it. We're just about at the end of the show, if you can believe it. But we are going to have to get back to also that story that we had read last week or the week before out of Wired back from April of 2000 by the CEO of Sun Microsystems titled Why the Future Doesn't Need Us. It's because of people like Bill Gates. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. Lonnie Clark is up next. It is Wednesday. Josh is also going to be live at 6. The boys from New York City with a continual condition at 8 o'clock. 9, we have Truth or Talk with April and Burstein. And at 11, we have Nick Burnaby and D.B. Schwartz. At 11 p.m. Eastern, and I don't know if I'm even going to have music going here. Yeah, here we go. 2, 1, bingo! All right, everyone have an awesome Wednesday. We got much more to talk about tomorrow, and I will catch up with you then. Everyone take care.